it's Glenn again. I think he's got a frog in his throat, or a frog, is it? I can't remember. Anyway, they've let me out again, and they've let me into Isla High School at the studio, which is always a great place to be in. One is warm, one is not in the rain, and one you get peace. So this afternoon, Lynn Johnson, who is a mental health, I would call her a worker, but I'm sure she'll correct me if I'm wrong, visits Isla High School. And as we hear more and more about mental health, more for adults than for children, I thought it might be an idea to meet with her and have a, as they say in Scotland, a wee chat regarding mental health counselling at the high school. So this is why we took the opportunity, because Lynn comes over, as she was telling me earlier, that she's here every Thursday, and you're going to say, but it's Friday, but she does come on a Friday just to catch up on anything that has come up while she's been off the island. So Lynn, mental health problems we hear about with adults more than we do with children. So if you could brief us on your role, and especially your role with the school children, whether they're on Isla, or as you said earlier, you also cover Tarbert. So I'm going to open the floor to yourself.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me. Young people, mental health, school counselling, really important service. A service that came to Argyll & Bute a few years ago. Before that, I was coming to Isla High independently to do school counselling, as it was identified as a really high need. All school children should have access to school counselling and mental health support. But now we have the exchange. The exchange is in place here at Isla High, hence why we're every Thursday. And they are an organisation that have taken over the school counselling for the whole of Argyll & Bute. And if you ever need to refer into them, you can do that through the school or as a parent yourself, or even a self-referral by going onto the website, theexchange-counselling.co.uk website. So easy access, you can find out all about it, you can find out all about what they do, their resources they have, and any information you're looking for. So that's the techie bit, if you like. Where I come in, as you say, quite rightly, I come every Thursday and have generally 5 slots, hoping that the boat arrives on time and I get into the school for 10. I do 5 50-minute slots. They get a 50-minute slot. And I meet with a young person and we do work around mental health, mental ill health, and look to support them as best as possible. It's a confidential service, which means a young person can come in, they can talk about anything they want, they can talk about home, school, friends, any problems they're having, or any positive things that might be going on for them. But it's a space where I don't have to run and tell a teacher, I don't have to go and report back to a parent, it's a confidential space. And before anyone panics about that, there are a couple of provisos. If a young person disclosed to me that there was current abuse, we would talk about that, and then we would go and get the correct help that was needed right there and then to make sure they were safe. And if a young person disclosed a suicidal plan, and again, I was concerned enough that they were going to look to complete, we again would talk about that and go and get the correct help, because it's all about protecting that young person. Young people talk about suicidal thoughts, young people talk about self-harm, they talk about difficult subjects, and that's okay. And they don't have to be afraid that they tell someone something like that and it's going to be panic stations. We all have thoughts that sometimes aren't pleasant. And it's about letting them have that space and those thoughts and working through it so they can identify their needs and how we can help them change those thought processes.
But do you find that there's been an increase since COVID, when the the children, even ourselves, were not, I would always say, confined to barracks, but were confined to the home, were not meeting with friends.
I think there has been an impact on some young people. So maybe for some young people it's been more significant. For maybe some young people they were more isolated, or it's done, if you like, more damage. So there is an impact. They'll come and they don't quite know how to interact properly or be with their friends or be in a space where they don't feel safe anymore. For some young people, it's made not a jot of difference. So it's very much about the individual. If you've got an individual that was a bit anxious and worried about the world anyway, COVID gave them the perfect opportunity to stay in and not speak to anybody and hide without being identified, because everybody was doing it. So that's enabled some young people to become more introverted and isolated. So yes, it's definitely had an impact. But I wouldn't say for everybody. It's for certain groups of young people, people that are more susceptible. It's definitely had that impact. Is it levelling off? At the minute, I would say that there's still quite, for those young people, it's still quite significant. They're still trying to find their way and re-engage with society in a productive manner. For the main amount of young people, that they're just getting on with it and they're fine and they're resilient and it's just another thing that's gone past and they're through it. You know, a lot of young people during COVID would use social media, would use Zoom and phones, and they were in contact with their friends anyway. They kept in contact. They had ways. They're so good at these things. I would say there's a definite split, a definite divide, and it just depends where your young person is in that.
But with so, you listen to the news or you watch the news, and mental health seems to be on the increase with our age group.
Uh-huh.
And you sometimes wonder, are we playing on it? Are we abusing it?
Well, I totally hear where you're coming from, and you get trends and things that are in fashion and the press decide that that's what we're going to talk about today, so that's all we focus on. So I agree, there's a bit of that. There's also a bit of we're more aware. We recognise these things now. We talk about these things now. You know, if we go back in time, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, did we ever talk about mental health?
No.
Did we recognise when someone of any generation was having a hard time, it was more pull your socks up, pull yourself together, just get on with it?
Yeah.
And in some cases, that's...
That's the best way.
Yeah, I'm not saying, and absolutely, uh-huh. I get that sometimes. I absolutely agree. But we are much more aware now that actually some people do struggle. You know, this isn't everybody, it's a small minority, but those that really do struggle with mental health can have highs and lows, if you like, and that can take them right through the life course. That can start when they're very young and take them right into old age, and something they'll struggle with all their lives. And for other people, it could just be a short engagement in mental ill health, where they have an episode, it could be a few months or a year, but they never ever have a problem again. So it's so much about the individual, and it is about the fact that we now recognise it. And a young person can go to their guidance teacher, can go to people in the school and say, I'm really struggling right now. We couldn't have done that when we were at school. Who was there? What would they have done with you then? They certainly wouldn't have said, well, it's okay, we'll find you someone to speak to. So it's a different place we're in now. So we have opened the doors, so it is easier for people to do that. Do some people clamber on the back of it? Maybe. But if they're doing that, maybe they're doing that for a reason.
And what about that? And social media, you've got TikTok, you've got all these. I'm not very up on this sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
But does this aggravate the situation, or is it good for them, or is it bad for them? You hear so many stories about what you can pick up on TikTok and all these.
Yeah, the mental health side. Yeah, yeah, I hear what you're saying. And I sound like a record a bit because I can't go one way or the other, because it is so much about the individual. What we have to acknowledge here is that you could have 10 people in a row, and they don't have to all be young people, but if you had 10 young people in a row and exposed them all to the same thing, they would all react differently. So it's the same with the exposure to social media. For some, it's great, they use it, they're safe, they know what they're doing, they don't hurt anybody, and that's fine. For some, they get completely obsessed with it, they get sucked into it, and that whole life becomes that, and that can be quite detrimental. They're trying to live up to these things and be the same as that, and that can lead certainly to ill health, mental ill health. And then you get some people that bully on it or are bullied by it, and you hear that a lot. That certainly is significant, where young people are picked on through social media. And again, we would never have, what are you talking about, you know? And they can even take a picture of you walking down the hallway, put it up on social media and edit it to make it look funny, and that's out there for the world to see. And so that young person that really is impacted by things like that, we get a lot of that, a lot of young people that are feeling bullied or picked on through social media. And then you go into things like pictures, where they've been requested, nude pictures, they call it sexting. And that's a big thing right now for young people, where they get caught up in that by accident and can make them feel really uncomfortable and bullied and nagged. And they don't want to be involved in it, but they can get involved in it by accident.
But the schools, having your good self and your colleagues working on it, what do each individual school do? Do they have, as you say, an administrator that they can go to when you're not here? Or do they literally, not literally, but do they wait for you to come on a Thursday?
No, especially the two main schools that I go into, a lot of primary schools and other schools, but the two main schools I do for school counselling, which are Isla High, as you said, and Talbot Academy, they both have really good support networks in place. They have guidance such as Mrs. Creswell, Mrs. Priestley, Dr. Weatherhog. They're all available here that young people can go to at any time if they need. They can go to reception. The girls at reception are fabulous and really supportive. It's a great support network. It's a fantastic school to come into. And I know, even some days before I'm coming, what's going on, if there's a problem. The teachers are just so supportive. And that is fantastic to see. They recognise, they accept, and they try and support their young people as much as they can. Because it's important to them. They recognise that if their young people are well and supported and happy, they're going to be more productive. And the school wants to support them as much as they possibly can.
And going from mental health, the depression sets in. Mm-hmm. Is this something that mental health is... the problem of the mental health is causing them to be depressed, or depression setting in?
Depression is just another label, if you like, and part of the mental ill health, mental health umbrella. It's not very often a young person gets diagnosed with depression. They have to go down the doctor route. I don't diagnose, I'm not a physician. I can work with some young people and recognise traits and symptoms and signs, in which case I would go back to guidance. Or with the child, with the young person's permission, I would say to them, look, I think there's more going on here. I think we can maybe do with some more support. Is it okay with you if we either speak to your parent or we speak to guidance? And we would then look to work together to get other people involved, such as physicians, so that they can look into that if I feel that it is something more significant. And even if they may identify that themselves, if you're at home and you're struggling, adult or child, and you're not sure what's going on, see a physician, go to the doctor, have a chat. Talking to someone, you do this is your job, and talking to someone is so important, talking to anyone. Because once you start vocalising what's going on, you can process it, you sort of take it away from who you are and look at it, and you can recognise if you need more support. So depression is significant. I think the stats are like at least 1 in 3 will experience depression at some point in their life. But again, that can be a couple of months for some. It can just be one episode. And for others, it can be more significant. So it's important that we all accept that, yeah, we talk a lot about it now, and maybe there's a bit of a bandwagon going on, as it were. But it's important to say, yeah, I recognise, I hear what you're saying, and you need to look after yourself.
And what reaction when you have a student talking to you, and obviously, as you said earlier, it's very confidential between, like a doctor.
Yes.
But when parents get involved, do you get, what's the word? Well, there's nothing wrong with my child. Why is she talking to you, or why is he talking to you?
I don't have a lot of interaction with parents. If I'm working with primary school children, because we service the primary schools as well, then we have to have parental engagement and we speak to them because they're we, and that's important. And they're very, very supportive. Generally, parents are really supportive because they want to help their children. The older ones, I do have some engagement with. Sometimes parents come in and the young person will want me to meet their parent. Sometimes it's the parents that's referred the young person in. Sometimes the guidance teachers will say, Lynn, can you come and meet this parent? They just need a little bit of a conversation, some support. So any parents I've met have always been positive and supportive and keen that their young person gets as much help as possible. They want their young person to be well, so that's important. So yeah, it's important as a community that we all just support everybody as much as possible.
Do you find that there's a difference when, because of, we're an island, obviously, and we are, as you have no doubt learned, that there is a ferry that occasionally runs, but we won't go there because it'll cause problems. But is there a difference between, and we're not an isolated, well, we are if there's no ferry. we're not an isolated island, whereas you sometimes feel that because you're on the mainland, you get not better attention, because that would be the wrong word to use, but I think the word is more attention.
Yeah, more services.
Or more services.
Yeah. Yeah, no, well, I've been coming to Isla, I think it's probably 6 years I've been coming over, and it's a fabulous place. I love coming over. I even quite like the ferry. Shh. Don't tell anyone.
Don't tell Carmen.
No, don't tell Carmen. And the young people, the people on the island, the community, they've always been so welcoming, and it's a lovely place to be. Yes, I think absolutely your services are restricted because of where you are. I'm based in Loch Gilped. Their services are restricted just because of their rurality. And yours even more so. Sometimes I wonder how you manage and how it works. You know, it's very rare that the ferry's not sailed, and I can do online services. If I don't get over for a day, we can do online sessions. So there's backup. But I do think it probably impacts on some of the young people's mental health. Like, they can't just go up and go bowling or to the cinema or to a concert. It's a whole rigmarole, a hospital appointment. You have to book something, you have to make sure it's sailing or flying, you have to get the expense. So I would imagine that for some, that's quite, adults as well, it's a significant impact. And yeah, I think your services are limited.
But how can, the word I think is, how can we upgrade? Would it be easier or more advantageous to this to have a permanent person on the island like yourself? Because there's the high school, and we know we have the primary schools on the island.
Yeah, and I certainly go into some of the primary schools now and again when Mrs. McDonald calls me or someone. But anybody here would be, you know, not to do myself out of a job.
No.
But yeah, if there were services on the island that can't go amiss, I'm not sure, there may be a councillor. I don't know, is there a councillor on the island?
I don't know.
I'm not sure if there's a private one already. It's not something I'm aware of. I was thinking more in like, I'm aware of things like CAMS workers.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've got the doctors on the island, but I know some NHS workers travel over.
Yes.
Similar to me. So that's where I was thinking more that you miss out that, you're reliant on people coming and going.
Yes.
And being able to, social workers, being able to come and go. So that restricts your services and your ability to, housing as well, I'm aware, is an issue on the island.
But would you not come under the National Health Service, as one might put it, when you've got nurses, doctors, you've got, we have very good doctors.
Absolutely.
And we have the dentist.
Yep.
So, Would your services should they not be referred to as a national health?
Ah, well, that now we're getting political, aren't we?
No, you're getting political. I'm only asking the question.
Well, it would be lovely if there was enough of everybody to service everybody easily without huge waiting lists. You know, we're aware for some assessments right now, you're a 2-year waiting list for young people, such as ADHD or autism. You've got children waiting up to 18 months for those assessments. And psychologists, 2 years to see a psychologist. That's a long time. These are the sort of things I wonder. But that's not down to Isla. It's not down to that. That's a national thing. School counselling is funded through the government and then funded into the exchange. So they've all got their different areas. And I'm not totally au fait with how that works. So I can't comment on who should be getting what and whether we should be getting more and how that is funded. It's above me. Mm. I do my job.
You would think the National Health, I know we'll just play on this one for a minute. Uh-huh. National Health is under a lot of pressure. And as you say, appointments, cancer, screening,
yeah,
all
absolutely.
This takes time. So you would think that the mental health is becoming even a bigger issue than it was 5-10 years ago. Should we look at having a nurse or somebody who is trained or like your good self, who understands these things and is there as a backup to you?
Well, you have a school nurse in play now, which is great, fantastic. So you have a school nurse here. So that's another avenue for young people to go to. And certainly, obviously, she's medically trained. And so it's a different avenue, but another support service. And absolutely, where we can all work together, we do. If we can all support each other as services, that's fantastic. And that's what it's about, trying to get as much out there, offer as much as possible with what we've got.
And what involvement does the school nurse or the local doctors, do you communicate?
I haven't had to as yet. If I had a young person and I was concerned enough, I can write letters to the doctors, I could ring them up. In Tarbert Academy, quite often I'll ring up and speak to, I was on the conversation this morning with the local nurse there about a certain young person to give them, to make sure we were all in the same place. And here it tends to happen that I speak with the guidance teachers and they do that. So it's done that way because they have such a good relationship with everybody and they know everybody, that it's done through them. So I communicate with guidance here and they then disseminate it where it needs to go.
The advantage with the island is that everybody knows.
Absolutely.
Everybody knows everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, and I'm forever finding out who's related to who.
Go there.
For me, like I said, I'm coming 6 years and I'm still learning all the time, and it's great, it's fantastic. We come over sometimes with our different hats on. Fiona Colacci's my manager for maids, and she's born and bred from Isla.
Mm-hmm.
So we're over quite often doing other things as well. So I'm forever meeting new people, making pathways, networking, so that we can offer an all-rounded service.
So you're, without putting you in an embarrassing position.
No, okay.
You're quite happy. We'll say quite happy with the workings of your part of the mental health with the school.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. Yeah, it's a wonderful place to go. I wouldn't still be coming.
No.
If I was worried about it, if it didn't work, everybody here has just been so supportive to the service, even when they didn't have to be at the beginning, when it wasn't a statutory service, they welcomed us in and let us work with them, from the head teacher down, always. And they'll always chat to you on the boat when you bump into them. Mm-hmm. They'll always talk to you. And they recognise that we're just trying to help them, we just want to help everybody move on and offer as much support as possible and do the best job we can.
Is the mental health problem on the island and the mainland, is there a big difference in the areas relating to the mental health of a student?
No, I think it's much of a muchness. Young people, what we would call intrusive thoughts is a big thing. When a thought comes, nobody likes me, I'm not good enough, these sorts of things, and it can really hang there and eat away at them. So that's a big one. Family, friends, friendships, things like that sometimes can weigh heavily. It is the same sort of thing. That there's nothing that stands out on Isla that's different
from the mainland.
No, I think when I first came and when I first started seeing young people here, the thing that surprised me the most was how many of them are into sheep and how many of them keep sheep. And that was amazing and fascinating. So for me, that was the biggest standout, maybe. The young people themselves, they're no different to...
They're different because they live on an island, but they're no different...
in their mental health needs. Maybe the odd time, they're more isolated. So maybe the anxiety of going into the city is more. But you find that in Loch Gilped the same, that they're very anxious about leaving their community. And that can be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
As you said earlier when we were talking off air, that the boat for you don't want to go anywhere, you're quite happy where you are.
Yes.
I mean, so then having to do that sometimes can be quite a trek and it can impact people differently.
I always find that my partner and I, we were away to away to the Edinburgh Tattoo. So by the time you go to Glasgow, then Edinburgh, then come home, we're only away 3 days. And we couldn't get back to the island quick enough.
Strangely, I was at the tattoo this year.
Well, yeah.
And 3 days, and my husband and I, and the same thing, because you're ready to come home when you're ready to come home.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because it's too busy, and there's too many people, and it's just not what you're used to.
No.
And the
thing I always find is that nobody talks to you.
No, my husband's born and bred in Ford. Over the other side by and he hates going. He says nobody speaks to you. I took him to London once. He sat on a tube train. He said nobody spoke to me. He said I'm not going there again. He said that everyone's so unfriendly, and he can't get over. But it's because in the small communities, you do all speak to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You all know each other. There is a relation there somewhere. There's a relationship there. Whereas in the cities, they tend to keep their heads down and do what they've got to do. A bit more. They're going somewhere. They're all going somewhere. So yeah, it's a big difference. Mm. And I think that certainly for young people's mental health, when they've got to go away to university or they've got to go and do something on the mainland, it's all that getting to the boat, getting on the boat, getting off the boat, getting where you're going. By the time you've got where you're going, it's such a trek. It can be hard.
I know we've heard about students who have gone to university or passed all the exams, done everything, gone to university, and they just thought, this is not for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that a mental thing or is that...
I think they just realise, because so much nowadays is focused on university and doing that, and it's just not for everybody. So for one or two, it will be mental health and the anxiety of being there and around those people, and that's a struggle. And for others, it'll just be, it's not for me. And I'd rather be where I was doing something
looking
else.
After sheep.
Looking after sheep, yeah, absolutely. Working in the whiskey industry, which, some people want to do. And, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's self-care is my key word, and two words I use all the time. If we don't take care of ourselves and offer ourselves kindness and do what's right for us, then we're not going to get anywhere. And that's at any age. It's about sitting on the sofa and watching your favourite movie with a hot chocolate, or going for a walk in the wind with your dog, or going to the tattoo and having a few days of escapism. But about being nice to ourselves. And we all need to be nice to ourselves. And nicer. We don't give ourselves that space.
I'm going to end now because... my head's buzzing with all these things going through it that Lynn has said, which is, for an older generation, as you said earlier, when we were children, I remember the joke I always have at the house is, when you were a child, Glenn, I said, I remember the day we had chalk and slates, never mind computers. But do you not think with as we advance with technology, are these, as we said, social media, are these things not dangerous sometimes?
Absolutely sometimes. Everything's dangerous sometimes, isn't it? If it's not used correctly, the kitchen knife is dangerous if it's not used correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about how we use them, how we prepare people, how we prepare our children, and how we embed them into society safely. You know, now we're talking about AI, and I'm trying to get my head around that and what that even means. You know, will we have counsellors in years to come? Will it be a computer doing it? In some, we can't keep up with it.
No.
It's phenomenal. And so, and we expect our young people too. We expect a lot from them. And so I think they just need, maybe sometimes we all just need to breathe and slow down and say, it's okay.
And on that happy note, we're going to say, Lynn, thank you very much. And I'm very appreciated and have learned a lot.
Good.
And I hope our listeners will take on board what you're saying and may be able to give us some feedback. And if you'd like to place your website or...
exchange-counselling.co.uk.
Once again, Lynn, thank you very much.
No worries at all. Thank you.